Good morning, this is Jonathan Frakes, Will Raker from Star Trek TNG, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Oscar Chip Hessenflug. Steve, why are we all dressed up in tuxedos today?
If you're Oscar, does that make me Felix?
It could be. No. It could be.
Oh, you
could
Oscar. Be the Oscar. Oscar, like, this is our Oscar show because the Academy Awards are happening on Sunday.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a dapper crowd here.
Well, that's why we have to have our wonderful guests. We've got Kyle Hickman, our movie expert, and Dane Michael, who is our Oscarologist. Good morning, boys.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Are we all ready for the, is it 90th annual Oscars this year?
Steve, we are ready.
I thought it was 90 last year.
Oh, 91 maybe then this year.
It's old regardless.
It is an old tradition, that is for sure.
So if anybody wants to have a picture of what this room looks like, and I did say the room, we're all having tuxedos and Kyle brought a football.
So it is the room.
The room.
And I'm wearing a toupee.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Let's start with some of the movies that we've seen this week that are not up for Oscars this year, but maybe for next year.
Sure.
You got a chance to see Alita Battle Angel. This is the graphic novel turned movie all about a young lady who can really mess up your day.
Absolutely. And I'm using the AMC Steps Pass program. And way that works is I see what's playing when I arrive at the theater. And this was the closest film to when I arrived. So it was this film versus the Rebel Wilson film, which I had to wait another 15 minutes for. I wasn't going to do that. This is this is James Cameron as one of the writers. And also this is Robert Rodriguez as our director. This was a fun film, and if you are a person who likes this type of genre, my first thought when watching this was, boy, this is what Star Wars should have been like, the new version.
It's got the action-adventure of what Star Wars should be, sure. Along with good characters?
It's got reasonable characters. It has a story that seems like it's going to move on. There are other parts, so it does end in a cliffhanger. What I will say is it's definitely sort of, you know, rollerball-ish. That's part of the game that they play. There are leaps of logic. There are time leaps that come into it, and there's bad dialogue. At some point, I laughed out loud with it. I'm saying all that just so you know that this is certainly not a perfect film. This is a young person's film that you go and you say, oh, this is a lot of fun, and they put a lot of money and graphics into it, and good.
Fun James Cameron adventure.
Absolutely.
Would you put it on the level with a Terminator kind of fun?
Sure. I it would be on that level. You know, certainly when you first saw Avatar and you said, oh, this is pretty, those are blue cat people.
Okay.
And this is a pretty fun world to play in. I think that you're going to enjoy that if this is the type of genre that you like. I do recommend it.
Kyle, Dane, have you seen this one yet?
We have not.
Okay. We have not seen it, although we normally see our movies separately. I still said we. Did you see this in IMAX, Chip?
I did.
Cool. Really?
I did. Well, I'm AMC IMAX, so I don't know
how.
It's
the fake IMAX.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it had this is one of the rooms that had the special sound and all that. It just happened to be that was what was playing when I arrived. And I can sit through 15 minutes worth of credits, but I'm not going to sit for an hour waiting for a film.
There you go.
I do recommend this, and I would say probably 65 out of 100 is how I recommend.
You also
well,
got
I hope
a chance.
It does well.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Yeah,
this is going to have legs. I can tell you.
Really,
because James
ones?
Cameron could use the money, you know.
Right. He doesn't have enough blue cat people movies in the bag that are ready to roll out. You also got a chance to see the Lego Movie 2, the second part. I have not made it to the movie theater to see this. You saw it before me, Chip.
So many people subscribe to music, have music subscriptions, so Spotify or Apple. Go ahead and download the Lego Movie 2 soundtrack. This is a lot of fun as far as the music in it. I would say this is a capable film. Is it as good as the first one? Probably not. But you know what? If you've got young people, they are going to enjoy this. And of course, they this movie takes place in the Sistar system, Steve. So there's lots of play with the words. And in the second film, you've picked up the cadence on how where this would be. So the sister's room probably is probably a good guess.
Nice.
And let's just say it's about the joy of playing and about how your imagination can take, you know, a movie. And once again, Will Arnett is a total joy to play Batman.
Perfect. Guys, have you seen Lego Movie 2?
Have not, but Lego movies are always fun, so I will definitely check it out.
It is on my list to see at home. Sorry, I don't have the AMC Stubbs Pass. That's a luxury item. But I did just download the soundtrack onto my iTunes based on your recommendation.
So the third to the last song is where they begin to roll the credits. I suggest you start with Beck. Beck is a blast.
There you go. You also got a chance to see an Oscar-nominated film. You saw Black Klansman.
That's right. This is a Spike Lee joint, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite film of the year.
Wow.
So if I had to vote for Oscars, this is what I'm voting for as the film that I would say is important enough for prosperity. I do not enjoy the beginning of the film, but then again, I'm not the film director, but I think once that film got started, we all should just jump in and you can just see how skilled a director and how wonderful the performance is and the message that you end up coming from this film. Very good film.
So Dane, have you seen this one?
I have. And this would likewise be my top film of the year. Wow. I don't think there's anything that I plan to see from 2018 that I think will top that. So this would also be my best picture choice. And this is coming from a person who the last Spike Lee movie that I actually can say that I really enjoyed was Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. So that was 1989. so yeah, it's been a long time coming, but
I agree with you.
The right subject.
I watched Chirac being near Chicago as we are. I thought that would be a fun take on the whole thing. And it really did not live up to the expectations that I had on that one. Kyle, did you see Black Klansman?
I did. Loved it as well. I don't know if I'd consider it my top movie of the year, but definitely top 10.
So that is one of the films that are nominated for Movie of the Year in the Oscars, and that's what we're here to talk about. So
we can do some foreshadowing because we're going to be coming back to all those films shortly.
Okay, so let me get to my crummy stuff that I watched while you guys watch good movies.
The first thing you picked, it doesn't look crummy. It looks like it's a very interesting.
You are film. Right. I did go through Netflix and I was looking for something to watch, and I tripped over accidentally a piece of footage called Kevin Hart's Guide to Black History. This is not a movie.
This is on Netflix.
This is on Netflix. It's an hour-long documentary from Kevin Hart giving an entertainment view on some black history figures that you may have never heard of before. These are not the top five. This is not about Martin Luther King and Carver with the peanut, although the peanut is mentioned. Like, that's all we can talk about really is this guy who found that peanuts were good. That's a joke in there. But they do talk about some of the unsung heroes of black history and some of the really great things that have happened as a result of the civil rights era, as a result of the Underground Railroad trying to save people. This is a very entertaining piece. I could see using this in class.
Okay.
This is educational and entertainment just enough that it's interesting.
Wonderful. And, you know, American history has black history as part of it, and that we celebrate it this entire month. In fact, if you follow our threads on Twitter and on Facebook, you will see a number of, in fact, a daily story. And we try very hard not to make it, you know, slave month. It becomes slavery is part of the American experience, but we have the civil rights movement and we have all those wonderful people who have impacted society for the better.
The theme sounds pretty similar to a documentary I saw on Netflix this week as well called The Two Killings of Sam Cooke. And I think a lot of us know Sam Cooke as this amazing musician, yes, one of the most incredible voices of all time.
Uh-huh.
And I had no idea that he was so progressive during the civil rights movement. And it was just an hour and 14-minute documentary about how he died and the mysterious way he died, because I didn't even know he died at a young age. I didn't know much about the Sam Cooke story, but a lot of it is about civil rights and the African American experience. So super fascinating.
And for some people who do not know who Sam Cooke is, Sam Cooke is a singer. He's got a very distinctive voice. You know, Valentine's Day was just last week. The song Cupid was a song that he sang, the Chain Gang song. And he was truly one of the great soul singers of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely iconic voice, Sam Cooke. Most people, even if you don't know Sam Cooke, you hear his voice, you know his work, his body of work.
Nice. I also saw another documentary. This is With Great Power, the Stan Lee Story. This one's on Amazon Prime. It's from about 10 years ago now. It's from 2010. And it's a nice documentary about this iconic figure who came up and created all of these superheroes, or at least was a part of creating all of the superheroes that we think of in the Marvel Universe, and what an interesting character he was. My favorite part of this documentary was seeing him interact with his firecracker of a wife. As interesting a character as Stan Lee was, his wife was going toe-to-toe with him. They were two very strong personalities in the room together in this documentary, and it was really refreshing to see how they interacted, because I don't think of Stan Lee's wife very often when I think of Stan Lee. I think of this larger-than-life grandfather figure who came to the conventions and talked about the wonderful things that he did, but the woman behind the story is pretty amazing, too.
Some people know Stan Lee as a little bit of an extrovert.
A little bit, yeah. He might be a little bit out there.
And his wife, interestingly enough, she was a total extrovert, too.
She is, too. The one story in here that really struck me was when they had an argument and she smashed the historic antique typewriter that Stan Lee coveted more than anything else in the house. And to hear them tell the story with fire in their voices when they're recounting this tale is really something to see. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
That's right. A little passion.
Uh-huh. A very passionate relationship those two had. I recommend that one, but not, with a little bit of reservation. It's not the best documentary I've seen, but it's got some gems in it. I recommend you find that one. Kyle, you got a chance to see the live action shorts that are up for Oscars, right?
Yeah. The what turns into an annual tradition, the local arts theater here, they pop those out. All five or six of them, they get nominated. So went there yesterday, actually, so it's very fresh. Plan is to go see the animated shorts later today, but they were all nominated for a reason. I mean, powerful stuff. I mean, the first one, Madre, is the story of this, it's what we assume is single mother. Her son is with his father on a beach, and dad disappears, and it's really just a 15-minute of trying to talk the kid through what to do with a strange person on it. So it. And it's very emotionally driven, right? So you start on this high note of almost stress as a viewer and all the way through just some really impressive short films. So don't want to go through all of them because it would take a while, but it was a worthwhile venture. Go
check them out. You do this annually. Do you enjoy going to see all these shorts?
Yeah. Normally free with the MoviePass app, but it's been, I know we talked about it previously, but it's been a little bit finicky lately. But I appreciate in a world where everyone's going to see feature-length films that are anywhere from an hour and a half to 2.5, 3 hours, getting these 15 to 20 to 30-minute snippets. I think it celebrates a different style of film that we don't normally give enough kudos to. So I appreciate it.
Well, where would somebody go to see the live-action shorts, and whether it's the live-action or the animated?
How do we get access to these?
I believe a few of them are on Netflix. I think when I was scoping through yesterday, there were a few of them on there. Detainment might be on there, maybe Marguerite. But my guess is otherwise, looking at your local theaters to see if they're showing these. Because I think, Chip, do you say your AMC nearby might have been showing them?
I did see them. And in fact, you can, every day, you could go see many of the nominated films. And then they also have special showings of the animated films and also of the live action short. So mm-hmm. what you saw is playing at my local theater.
Yeah. Dane, do you know from your end other places online streaming?
Well, we near us in I live in the Omaha metro area. We have AMC theaters everywhere, and I know that they always showcase those in their own like where you can just watch them all at once. Mm-hmm. In years past, and I haven't seen any of them this year, but I haven't searched. In years past, many of them have been on YouTube. So you might try just searching the titles to see if any of them would be on YouTube.
Yep.
But they are often worth seeking out. So,
yep.
Dane, you got a chance to see If Beale Street Could Talk. Tell us about that one.
I did. So that is from Barry Jenkins, who directed the Oscar-winning Moonlight a couple years back.
Oh, wow.
This is a similarly beautiful tale. Has a wonderful score, great Oscar-nominated performance by Regina King. I thought the entire cast actually was incredible, and I thought I would have ranked probably Regina King's performance. She doesn't have that much screen time, maybe like fourth or fifth. So I was surprised that a lot of these actors, a lot more of them, didn't get awards attention. But King is the known quantity. She's won a couple Emmys. I first came to know who she was when she played in Jerry Maguire as Cuba Gooding Jr.'s wife, Marcy.
Okay.
It's a tough subject, this film, but it's worth seeking out. The score, again, is Oscar nominated, and it's gorgeous. And it's based on a novel adaptation from James Baldwin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wonderful. Yeah.
Awesome. Extraordinary film.
So you've seen this too, Kyle?
Yep. I would consider it one of the biggest snubs for Best Picture. Very surprising.
Go. We'll get to our list of snubs for Best Picture, which is getting lengthier and lengthier as the month goes on your Twitter feed. We'll get to that. Let's look at what's opening this week. Maybe there's some Oscar-worthy movies opening this week. The first one is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, which is, surprisingly, the third How to Train Your Dragon movie.
I had no idea that was... I mean, I knew there was a lot of them. I thought they were all films.
You thought there was like six or seven of them, right?
Correct.
Yeah, this is the third movie. There have been two series, Dragons, Riders of the Berk, and Race to the Edge, that have been animated series. But this is the third of the movies in this series.
Well, let's just say that if you had a young person, somehow my children had no interest in these.
My children either.
But these look very capable.
Yeah.
And so it's coming out. So it's a family film and Oscar nominated, I'm sure, for next year. What do you think?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. There are great animated films out there. This might be in the category. Boys, do you know anything about How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, I've seen the first two. Really enjoyed both of them. They're good animated films.
Wonderful.
I've seen the first one only, and the thing I remember most about it was... it had the misfortune of being released the same year as Toy Story 3, so it just got mowed down in the Oscar conversation.
There you go. There is another film called Run the Race. This is small town brothers who are running into their, the world's problems and their worldviews and how to manage those lifestyles.
And I guess the important part about this would be that the producer of this is Tim Tebow, the football player, the Heisman winner.
Okay.
And this is a faith-based film. So very much in the spirit of the productions down in Georgia, who did Facing the Giants and
Fireproof and all of those. Those sure. are really good films. This maybe is not quite as on the level as those films, but this might be a great story, and you might learn a lot about humanity in this one, maybe.
And then, we've got the one that I have most, I'm looking forward to, Steve. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's called This Giant Beast That Is the Global Economy. This is an 8-part documentary.
Adam McKay
and Will Ferrell.
They're the producers.
Are producing here. And this seems like that good balance between entertainment and information so that we can get the information that we need in an attractive package so that we can pay attention to it.
This is about economics, something I have a lot of interest in. In fact, I would say that that's probably it's the subject I spend most time reading about. But what I will say about Adam McKay is that he was the one who did the Big Short. He was the producer for that the director for that. He was also the director for Vice. So he seems to find subjects he has deep interest in And this is a product that very similar to the Kevin Hart experience you just had, sort of a person who is a charming, humorous person to take a deep dive in a subject that, you know, sometimes it needs a little love to introduce to the masses.
And it features Cal Penn as the host here, who is a very entertaining, fun character. I look forward to seeing this one on Amazon Prime.
The Cal Penn narrator presence, that's always interesting because I think a lot of people were introduced to Cal Penn through Harold and Kumar and those films. And so once you know Cal Penn and how politically engaged he is, you see a different side of him. So I think a lot of people will see a different side of Cal Penn.
Look forward to talking about that one when we get to see a chance to see it.
Maybe we'll have go to White Castle.
There you go. Sounds good.
Choose your decisions.
So we're here to talk about the Oscars. Kyle is here as our avid movie fan. He attends his local theater so regularly, sees so many of these movies, and has such great opinions and ways of looking at it. You can go to his blog, kyleahickman.blogspot.com, to read all about what he's been watching and his expertise in film. Dane Michael is a self-described Oscarologist who has been feverishly tracking the film awards race annually for 2 decades, and he will be regularly appearing on a new podcast, The Hot Damn with Josh Lamb Show, as the movie guest once a month. And he's currently working on his own cult film podcast that is hopefully coming soon, Dane.
Hopefully. Yeah, okay. We're in the beginning stages of that. So I like Oscar movies and I like B movies and very little in between.
Yeah, I like B movies. And then I occasionally watch a good movie and I'll come onto the show and go, Chip, I watched a good movie. I didn't like it.
my favorite part of this is at one point, Steve said, we're going to have an Oscar show. And thank God we had Kyle on. He had watched them all and I had watched some and Steve had watched.
So let's go through this year. We were talking about last year. Let's go through this year. Kyle, how many of this year's Oscar-nominated Best Picture films have you seen?
Seen all of them.
Every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Dane, how many have you seen?
Every single one of them, and this is the first year that I had seen all of them before they were announced as Best Picture nominees.
Wow. Chip, how many have you seen of the Oscar-nominated films?
5 of 8, and if we did not have the Polar Vortex, I would have seen 7 of 8.
Wow. I saw Black Panther. I liked it very much.
So this should be a productive conversation.
So welcome to the Oscar show. We call our experts in so that Steve can sit back and drink this ginger ale.
All right, so if we wanted to watch the Oscars, let's start off with that. Where would we watch the Oscars, Steve?
The Oscars are going to be live on Sunday, February 24th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ABC. That's broadcast television.
What's this broadcast stuff?
Yeah, I know. We'll get to that when we talk about the end part of this. But yeah, it's a live, it's an event. You go and you watch it together as a group. There's people that still have Oscar parties, right?
I guess so. Let's start with the other part is that when you're getting ready to broadcast a show and putting together everything, sometimes there's some controversy going on around it. Let's kind of blow through a bunch of the stuff that kind of surrounds a show that basically is about a celebration of films and the best of the film in the film industry.
Well, the biggest controversy, I think, was the fact that Kevin Hart was supposed to be the host of this show this year. It was determined that he didn't really want to be in the middle of the controversy that came up about some of the statements that he made on Twitter, 15, 20 years ago.
Well, that is something that what you say online sometimes doesn't go away, and we're going to have to figure out a way of dealing with that. And we have to recognize he is a comedian.
Right.
And sometimes comedy can be a little off color.
And sometimes attitudes change, and history changes the way we look at things. And his attitudes have changed from what he said on the record 10, 15 years ago. But still, there's that pall that is over the idea of this comedian being the host.
So there's not going to be a host for this film.
Not Dane,
do we have a history or anything that shows that this that an Oscar show can be without a host?
There is history here. Actually, it was quite common in the 70s to not have a single host. You know, when they did, it was usually Bob Hope. But many years throughout the 70s, they would have like five or six different actors and actresses, television personalities would kind of split the hosting duties. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was 1989 or so was the most recent year when they did not have one. And that was the year that we wound up having Rob Lowe in a singing duet with, I believe it was Sleeping Beauty. Snow White. It was Snow White. So if we luck into something like a Rob Lowe Snow White duet this year, then it will have been worth it.
So do you look forward to the idea of this show having no host and watching them put together a production without that anchor?
You know, in all honesty, the host has only, to me, ever like mattered at the very top of the show, because when they make their appearances, it's usually no more than four times later throughout the show. It's not really them like doing their bit or a song and dance or anything. Everybody just cares about the top of the show. So I think that's the main thing that's up in the air, is people don't know what's going to happen at the top of the show. But that's, again, maybe more of a reason to tune in than to see, you know, Kevin Hart do his monologue. You know,
well, there's usually if for those who don't watch the Oscars, there's it is where all the stars of these movies and the actors show up, and so you have an audience already prepared, and they kind of, this is their warm up, the sort of setting the tone of the show. Mm-hmm. Music is also a big part of this show. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with what's going on with music, Steve.
Well, they had all of these great singers and all these great songs, the best song nominees, and the idea was maybe for time we could shorten the show and not have all of them perform, and the idea of having just one or two, maybe three, of the actual songs being performed on stage. But then that brought into a whole nother conversation about, well, how do you choose? Do you snub these other Oscar nominees because we don't have time, because their songs aren't as important as somebody else's song? And so they've come to an agreement where everybody's going to perform their songs on stage.
What I would say is Kyle can just perform everyone's show.
Yeah, there you go.
Song.
Sounds like a terrible idea.
So I look forward to the performances. I think that there's some great music that came out of these movies this year. A Star Is Born has been just looked at as a wonderful film. Some great
certainly
music.
Something that highlighted Lady Gaga's talent. Mm-hmm. And you know, then you throw in Mary Poppins, Emily Blunt, and
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. And so there's a lot of music that, you know, is part of these films. And I guess we're going to get to watch all of them. It is an entertainment show, Steve.
It is, but it's a lengthy one. I see where they're trying to cut for time some of the length of just staring at all these Hollywood stars and just everybody saying how wonderful everybody is. I could see why they might want to cut that for time.
Did they ever make a decision on if they're going to cut certain awards? I know it was rumored.
So yeah, this was kind of a whirlwind week on that front, because ABC, basically, I think they're under pressure from ABC and Disney to keep the show to 3 hours. Why that's the case, I don't know why. The Oscars are supposed to be a huge event night. Why can the Grammys go over 4 hours? Why does nobody care if the Super Bowl and the festivities last 6 hours? You know, I don't understand this commitment to a 3 hour show that winds up hurting all these feelings. On Monday, I think it was, they announced that they would be cutting four of the live awards from the show and having them basically handed out during commercial breaks. And they said that they would promise to show the acceptance speeches later, like chopped up in the broadcast.
Uh-huh.
That didn't make sense to me, but the real outcry came when they announced what those four categories would be this year. And two of them were cinematography and editing, which are the two things that you simply cannot separate from film as an art form, no matter how hard you try. There was such outcry from that by Friday they had announced the overturning of that decision. So all 24 categories are going to be presented live in the telecast, and we're probably going to go over 3 hours.
It's been a bad run for the Oscars ever since announcing the popular film category and taking that back after the outcry. It's just been an interesting year.
Disney's got to win somewhere.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly like a lot of people are taking issue with ABC being the network airing these and Disney saying we need these films in, because none of the four categories they cut had a Disney nominee. So no Black Panther, no Mary Poppins were in jeopardy of missing their screen time.
This whole show is just marketing, right? This is selling Hollywood at its glamourful best to the world.
Well, and also making filmmaking or celebrating as an art form, mm-hmm. is probably would be a better way of trying to suggest what they're doing. But it is a lot of Hollywood.
So let's go through the nominees and see, maybe we can suss this out in less than 3 hours. What do you think?
All right, Steve, tell us, what are the nominees for Best Picture?
Best Picture nominees this year are Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, A Star is Born, and Vice. I say Black Panther is the only one of these that I've seen.
So we've got one vote for Black Panther. So Disney, so
that's your winner of best popular film, I
yes,
guess.
That is the most popular film in my ticket buying year.
Kyle, tell us a little bit about what do you think about the nominees, and what should a person who likes film sort of look for in the best film?
So I have lots of thoughts on this, and as Steve alluded to earlier, I've been popping a Twitter thread out for the past 23 days on some of my thoughts on this. But I think for a lot of people, Black Panther was a little bit of a surprise, being a superhero movie. It's not traditionally the type of film you would see in this, but I think most people would say Black Panther was a good film on its own. We've already talked about Black Klansman. I think most of us really enjoy that. I personally really enjoyed The Favorite. That was probably one of my favorite ones of this list, along with Black Klansman.
That would be your favorite?
The Favorite is the favorite? Got it.
You know. The film, Vice has gotten a lot of love. I'm not in particular someone who thinks it's maybe as deserving as others. I think Dane and I were talking about this earlier. We probably anticipate Roma is going to win. I don't know, Dane, if you have any thoughts on that front. Well,
it's so hard to actually predict the biggest award anymore because of the way they do it is you don't just vote for one movie. You actually rank five, and it's called a preferential balloting system. So you rank five, no matter how many nominees there are, in order of most preferred to least. And then you, this year, since there's eight nominees, you'll be just leaving three off entirely. But because of that, it almost matters as much how many second and third place votes you can garner as first place, because I think Roma's going to get the most number one votes. But there's a Producers Guild Award that's a precursor to this, and they use the same balloting method. And Green Book actually came out on top of that one. And I think it's because it had more of the middle range votes. So it's like,
yep,
it
pulled more
getting to the point where the least votes. Controversial yep. movie is going to make it in.
Well, and hasn't Green Book gotten some controversy? Because
it is controversial.
Because people view it in this. View it in the same way they do Three last year, and that its approach to race maybe isn't necessarily the most accurate, right?
Right. And it's actually been compared to like Driving Miss Daisy in reverse. Because it's about a white guy driving a black guy around in the 60s. And so it'd be like 30 years later, we're awarding the same movie that we awarded back then. That treats the race subject similarly. And it's like, has the Academy progressed at all in this time? You know, not all of that controversy I'm on board with. They're saying the depiction of Don Shirley, who is Mahershala Ali's character, is wholly inaccurate. That's what his family and their state is claiming. Really? However, they've released audio tapes of him talking about those times, and it's kind of exonerated the screenwriter, who is actually the son of the character that Viggo Mortensen plays in the film, the driver.
Okay. Well, in fact, I'll just name my five, and then we can come back to discussing this, because I thought Black Klansman was the best film of the year, and my second best would be Green Book. So the controversy, regardless, I really thought this was a film that I really enjoyed. I probably would have said The Star Is Born, Roma, and The Favorite. So Favorite would have been my fifth. Now, I know I can go back to Kyle real quick, and Kyle can say, no, Chip, you were totally wrong.
I don't know about that. Anybody who puts Favorite in their top five, I'm probably in support of. All you guys need to know is number eight. If you're going to preferential all eight, number eight would be Bohemian Rhapsody, and I'm extremely passionate on this. I've got a Twitter thread going of all the films that I think are way more deserving than that. I mean, some of those, You Were Never Really Here, Leave No Trace, Hereditary, Death of Stalin. I mean, I could just run, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Just run down a list. Cold War was great. If you're going to put Roma in there as a foreign language film, I mean, can you put some other foreign language films in there as well? So Bohemian Rhapsody for me is so undeserving of this award. And I think we were talking about in the pre-show of just, it's just extremely popular because Queen is so popular as a band.
Could those later, I'm talking about 7 and 8 nominee, really be driven by these were the everyday moviegoer who doesn't go to watch the greatest film in the world, certainly will react positively. So Bohemian Rhapsody, my children really, really enjoyed. And Black Panther was probably the most celebrated film I've been recently on an opening night. I mean, people who
like Star Wars
normally level. Do not go to the theater, they were certainly dressing up, and it was a place to be.
And it was the number one grossing film of the year. That film made a lot of money.
So the other ones may be more artistic, may have legs beyond, and may be more important. But, I mean, could this be the nod to the general population, the bourgeois, my friends?
Yeah, it would possibly be a response to the threat of, or the perceived threat by members of the Academy that, you know, they're going to roll out this best popular film category, which is just stupid. I'm sorry, it's a dumb idea to try and attract more viewers. I think the Oscars are just doomed to lose viewership every year. It's just, that's just how things are. There's more to do in the world today than there were, you know, than there was in the 70s and 80s pre-internet, you know. There's a lot more. I mean, so I think this could be a response saying, okay, well, we'll rank some of your, you know, top grossing films in there. So you just shut up about this best popular film thing from now until the end of time. But yeah, because I don't think that those legitimately have a chance to win. I mean, I would like to say that A Star Is Born had a chance to win. I just don't know what happened to it in the Oscar race. It started out as the front runner, you know, 3 months ago, and it hasn't won a single thing, basically, except for the best original song. You can lock that one in.
Yeah, it'll win again. Shallow will win.
The question for me becomes, you know, what is the difference between a good movie and an Oscar-winning movie? There's been so many years that the popular idea of the best movie, the box office tickets, hasn't equated to the best movie that the Academy looks at. Where's that disconnect?
It's a great question, Steve. I think it's deeper in terms of how we consume media. How simple do we want stories pushed towards us versus critical thinking? The art of films, right? Like, I think one of my favorite movies of the year is At Eternity's Gate with Willem Dafoe, who he's nominated for an Oscar for his role as Vincent Van Gogh. But that type of film has very little mass market appeal because it's niche content in the first place, and two, it's slower, right? And people will check out films like Roma, but it's a slow film, right? And it's character driven, and it doesn't have the explosions and the loud noises and the bright lights that people are attuned to with a lot of the films that they see.
In fact, why don't we have Dane and Kyle kind of rank their top five? And
number one is probably either The Favorite or Black Klansman for me. Number three is probably Green Book. Four is probably, oh Lord, I don't love a lot of the options. I guess Roma four, and then five, Star is Born.
And if I were voting, I would go Black Klansman one. I would go Green Book two, The Favorite three, Star is Born four, and say Black Panther five.
Okay. So what we're seeing right there is that if you took, that's three votes right there. You can sort of see how this could lead a winner that may or may not be. I mean, from the three votes we had two votes for Black Klansman, and then we had a second place vote for Black Klansman.
Uh-huh. So absolutely. I'm on upset alert for Best Picture, and the upset would be a great thing, in my opinion, because right now we have Roma out in front as probably the number one first place vote getter, but it is a long slog. It's on Netflix if anyone's interested. It's a black and white foreign language film, which you'd be crazy to say that could even win Best Picture, you know, even 2 years ago. But they've diversified the Academy every year, you know, in this, I think it's 4-year plan. And I think last year was the last year of that. But we've already seen some choices that you wouldn't see under the old system, like when Moonlight upset La La Land, even though we all thought La La Land had it. Thanks to
really
Bonnie
upset Clyde. Because we even had the wrong name being called out.
Right.
It was just another day of sun. Yep. But it wasn't exactly Moonlight.
We call that an envelope.
Yeah. So I'm going to be on upset alert, and I really hope that Black Klansman could pull the unexpected upset of the century. It might win the Writers Guild Award tonight for Spike Lee. Those are being given out at like 7 o'clock Pacific time. And that would be a big surge heading into this final week that might give us a clue in. I hope he at least wins this screenplay Oscar, because he's never won an Oscar before.
Dane, do you feel like if they were going to nominate a foreign language film like Roma, do you think that something like Cold War or Shoplifters would have been more deserving of that nomination?
I adored Cold War. I thought it was three times more engaging than Roma at half the length. And it was incredible. It did get nominated for Best Director and Best Cinematography, which is, those are categories you usually don't see a lot of foreign films get into. That might take some heat away actually from, say, like Best Director. You know, some of the people who might vote for Cuarón and Best Director, who's hands down the favorite right now, might go, you know, to Paweł Kowalski for Cold War. And that would leave a lot more votes for Spike Lee, who could pull the upset there and become the first black director to ever win the Oscar.
I was not aware of that.
That's history that needs to be made based on the incredible film that he made, I think.
Yep. And if you guys haven't seen Shoplifters, incredible foreign film as well. Extremely high rated from the critics, but even just the average human score as well. I mean, very, very, very good film about a story. It's a story of a family of shoplifters, essentially, right? Of them trying to navigate just getting through life. And they essentially adopt a young girl that illegally, because she's kind of abused by her family and her parents, and what it's like to go through law enforcement from that standpoint. So
what country's entry was that? It's in Asia, right? It's an Asian.
Yeah, it's Japanese. I think it's Japanese.
Okay.
Now we do have actors who are also nominated. Let's go through which actors are nominated and what films that were from, Steve.
All right. We've got Christian Bale in Vice, Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen from Green Book.
In fact, Kyle, do you have any strong feelings on who should win this? I think you've already mentioned it.
I like Willem Dafoe, but he's not. I would compare it to Viggo as in Captain Fantastic a few years ago. Great performance, but it's just not going to do it. Rami is probably going to get a lot of the attention, but I don't think he's going to win. Dane, who do you think is going to win?
Rami Malek has been winning all these precursor awards, and I feel like what he's doing, don't get me wrong, he's great in it, but I think it's more of a parlor trick compared to what Bradley Cooper actually pulled off in A Star Is Born. Cooper is singing his own songs, playing his own guitar, co-wrote music, and not only that, he wrote, produced, and directed the film. Rami Malek is lip-syncing Freddie Mercury, wearing prosthetic teeth.
And so, not even Freddie Mercury, because somebody else was singing.
Now, didn't John C. Reilly do this a few years ago? Yeah. And Walk Hard?
Yeah, exactly.
Walk Hard.
I mean, a vote for Rami Malek is a vote for Dewey Cox. So
there you go.
I love Dewey Cox. In to our conversation earlier, if the Academy loves Green Book the way it does, and Vigo's got a chance to win, I suppose, at that point in time, too. I like Vigo in that role. I thought he did a good job transforming into that role.
For Best Actress in a Leading Role, we have Yalitza Aparicio from Roma, Glenn Close in The Wife, Olivia Colman in The Favorite, Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born, and Melissa McCarthy in Can You Ever Forgive Me?
You know, I've seen every single one of these performances. If I were voting, I would actually pick Melissa McCarthy, but I have no issue with the perceived winner, who is going to be Glenn Close.
Yep.
Wow.
For The Wife, it's kind of a career Oscar. I believe she would go 0-for-8 if she lost, so they don't want to do that to her and make her the biggest loser in Oscar history.
She'd boil a rabbit for that.
Exactly. She'd boil Olivia Colman's rabbits from The Favorite.
Yes.
Yeah, Lady Gaga, also, she's a first-time nominee, but she would also be deserving, in my opinion. But if you haven't seen The Wife, it's not a, you know, incredible movie, but it's entertaining enough. And picture, like, the situation here that in the role she's playing, it's kind of equivalent to maybe what Stan Lee's wife was like. So she's living in the shadow of this great man who's just won the Nobel Prize. And
there's a twist.
Yeah. Should we spoil it for people?
It's for free on Southwest Airlines if you want to catch it there.
Since it's free, we won't spoil it for people. You should watch it. I have no issue with Glenn Close winning an Oscar finally.
Yeah, I think she will win. She won the gold for that. I would prefer Olivia. So I think Can You Ever Forgive Me is one of the more underrated movies of the year. But I think it'll get its due in this next category, I assume you're going to talk about.
Well, let's move on to actor in a supporting role, which is the next thing on my screen. We've got Mahershala Ali for Green Book, Adam Driver for BlacKkKlansman, Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born, Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me, and Sam Rockwell in Vice.
Now, what really gets me about this category is Ali's character in Green Book.
Is a lead.
Yeah, how is that a supporting actor?
Yeah,
he's a co-lead. Lead.
Yeah,
he's a lead. I struggle with Sam Rockwell even getting nominated in that. He had so little screen time in that film comparatively, and I struggle with that one. I don't know about you, Dane.
When I saw Roadhouse, yeah. I mean, I knew the power of Sam Elliott. He's a trainer.
Okay, he's talking about Sam Rockwell though.
Rockwell.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you were talking about Sam Elliott.
Okay. He's so Sam Rockwell.
He plays Bush.
GW. Yeah. So that one is what they refer to as an afterglow nomination, when you're still aglow from the buzz of winning your Oscar the previous year. So he was in 3 Billboards and won for that. So he's kind of just, you know. So who knows?
I enjoy Sam Rockwell's work. Moon was one of my favorite sci-fi, interesting, mind-twisting films.
Well, Sam Elliott killed Hitler, and you know he was out hunting Bigfoot, Steve.
Yes, that's right. The man who killed Hitler and the Bigfoot, Sam Elliott.
Yeah. Adam Driver was great in BlacKkKlansman. I mean, I would assume it's going to be between Mahershala and Richard E. Grant. I loved Richard E. Grant. Can You Ever Forgive Me? Probably my favorite performance of the year, but who knows? Mahershala has kind of gotten a lot of the buzz.
My vote would be for Grant, but my prediction is absolutely for Ali because he has won every single precursor award. He seems like the safest pick in any of the acting categories to win his second Oscar. So, because let's not forget he won for Moonlight a couple years ago.
Yes, that would be Remy from Netflix's House of Cards, just for those who are following at home.
Cottonmouth from the Luke Cage.
That's right, Cottonmouth.
He's done some great stuff on film the last few years, no doubt about that.
He was also, I think, in Alita.
He's in Alita. He's in Alita as well.
He was in Hidden Figures, too.
Yes, he was. Mahershala has been busy the past 3 or 4 years.
And True Detective now.
Oh, yeah. Detective, absolutely. Fantastic acting in that one.
People are going to vote and be like, well, we love him in True Detective. Let's give him another Oscar.
Depending on how you view the lead or supporting role, the person I would have loved to see in here is Ben Foster in Leave No Trace, if you consider Mackenzie's character as the lead, because I think he was extraordinary in that film. But I could see people considering him the lead, depending on how you view the film.
I haven't seen that, but Deborah Granite keeps getting screwed over by the Academy.
Highly recommend it, Dane. That's your homework for me. Watch Leave No Trace, one of the best movies of the year.
Will do.
Moving on to actress in a supporting role, we've got Amy Adams in Vice, Marina de Tavira in Roma, Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz both for The Favorite.
Which one will be the favorite? Neither, because they can't give it to one another. That'll never happen.
Right.
This is the most difficult acting category to call by far.
I got to think it's Regina, right?
Well, Regina was the critics' favorite. She won like every critics' award. She did not get nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award, and she didn't get nominated for the British Film Academy's awards. So that's weird because usually you would, I mean, this would be the first time you'd ever have an Oscar winner that missed both of those precursor awards. So it's hard to call, but at the same time, you do have Stone and Vice potentially canceling each other out. However, Vice won the British Film Academy, the BAFTA, last week. So they're clearly voting for her over Emma. And she's the possible upset pick in that category, I think. And then Amy Adams is going to take Glenn Close's place as the biggest loser after this year, because I think she'll be 0-6 or 0-7.
She's not a loser in my...
She's a winner, but
some would say that's consistency.
Yeah, there you go. She's just not in Vice enough, I don't think. So
no, I don't think so either.
All right, so we got to animated feature film. Here we have The Incredibles 2, The Isle of Dogs, Mira, Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. That's a pretty diverse animation list this year.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, lock it down, right?
I would say that. That was probably the most joyful, and I think it's changed comics from this brooding, psychopathic way to much more of a fun-loving and joyful and youthful genre, is what I would say.
It's one of my favorite movies of the year. If I had a way to like adjust how Best Picture was oriented, I would throw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse right into that category.
I'm hoping the Academy doesn't screw that one up. That would be so tone deaf of them to not give it the Oscar. It swept the Annie Awards, won the BAFTA, the Golden Globe, any animated prize this year it has won. So don't just pick the Pixar movie, please.
Please.
And John Mulaney played Spider-Ham, so you know it was good.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage was also.
That's right. Nicolas Cage was in it.
Yes, he was. The amount of energy and time that goes into a film like that, it's just unbelievable. Absolutely incredible.
So let's skip down to Best Director, because that certainly goes to the heart of some of these movies. We've got Black Klansman, Spike Lee nominated for a Best Director, Cold War, The Favorite, Roma, and Vice.
Alfonso's going to win. But...
Right, he's going to get his second... Oscar. I agreed with it the first time.
how does a film win Best Picture but not Best Director?
Or vice versa.
Yes. I mean, it just seems to me like, well, if Black Klansman is my best film of the year, as far as I'm concerned, how would Spike Lee not win that?
I mean, I kind of gave you the answer when I told you how they voted for Best Picture. It's sure. differently than just the number one vote getter. So anyone who's just checking off, say, Roma for their number ones, you know, they, or I'm sorry, that's a bad example because it's probably going to win both. Say they're checking off Black Klansman as their number ones. They might say Black Klansman's their number one, but Spike Lee's their number one director. And then let's say that Roma's their second choice for picture, so on and so forth. You know, just because the plurality vote's going to win the director, so that's what we think is Roma. But the plurality vote might not win Best Picture because it'd have to have so many number one votes to win on the first round alone. So
it's that's a numbers
game. That's why you get that split now. And I think also they've always tended to award these writer directors more so than just the director, like a Peter Farrelly who just showed up and directed Green Book, you know, without much preparation. So
exactly.
Right. Dropping down to documentaries, here we get a little bit into the weeds because we've got some really great documentaries for 2018. One of the biggest years for documentaries. Nominated this year are Free Solo, Hail County This Morning, This Evening, Minding the Gap, Of Fathers and Sons, and RBG. There's some titles that are definitely missing from this category in 2018. The biggest one being my favorite movie of 2018, Won't You Be My Neighbor, is 100%. An absolute snub on this list.
Well, I've got 100%. One thing to say about that, Steve. Yeah, when tragedy strikes and you're looking around, look for the helpers.
That's right.
Look for the helpers.
So there should be helpers at the Academy Awards to help me out with my tragedy here. What do you think, Kyle?
I sign off 100% on the Won't You Be My Neighbor snub. But one of my favorite movies of the year, much like you. I would say as well, Three Identical Strangers was just such an intriguing documentary, and the fact that it wasn't nominated I struggle with. But I will say I've seen a couple of these. Free Solo I found to be a really, really impressive work of documentary. I mean, that sweaty hands towards the end as you're watching this guy free climb one of the biggest cliffs in the world. Absolutely incredible documentary. So I saw RBG and I didn't think it was that great. I mean, we're in a year where there's a documentary about RBG and a film on the basis of sex about RBG. So it's a lot of RBG going on.
Yeah.
But I've heard Mining Gap incredible. I haven't seen A Fathers and Sons or Hale County.
Okay. What do you think, Dane?
If I'm trying to pick now between Free Solo and RBG for which one will win, Ruth Bader Ginsburg obviously is not in great health right now. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the, there's going to be like a lot of people just looking at the subject rather than the actual nuts and bolts filmmaking, because Free Solo right. would be the better, well, you know, more well-made, more unique film. RBG is pretty by the book. Mm-hmm. And I would pick Free Solo, but I think that RBG, even though Free Solo won the British one, stateside here, Ruth means a lot more to these voters. I think it's going to be RBG.
I agree, and I'm with that. It's very important that we disconnect the subject from the filmmaking, though.
Exactly.
I think you're absolutely right. RBG is a good documentary because of the subject. Free Solo is just an amazing look at this mind-boggling concept of climbing this cliff.
On the grand scheme of things, though, my gut tells me that the people voting are not necessarily watching the films.
And, it's true.
And so at some point, when you start getting down to documentary or documentary shorts or things like that, it's going to be much more, subject is probably going to be very important. And that's just, unless there's a lot of buzz over watching something.
Steve, I have an idea. I say, as a form of rebellion and as a form of marketing, we send in Tom Hanks dressed as Mr. Rogers during the presentation style.
And to present that award?
He just cuts it off and says, I'm going to let you finish, but Won't You Be My Neighbor was the best documentary of the year. And we'll call that marketing for the film that comes out in
that would be fair.
Late 2019.
Absolutely. I endorse this idea. I wherever you Patreon is for this, Kyle, I will give you money to make this happen.
Well, we can just... Does Tom... Is he on Twitter? I was about to say, we could tweet at him. I doubt he is.
I doubt
he doesn't seem like the type. He doesn't seem like the type.
No, I don't think that he is. I think maybe his kids might be. Maybe he's got to get to him that way.
He's got a publicist or something. He's got an agent.
Make it happen.
We'll do some... I'll do some work. He's... You know he's got it in his closet. They're probably filming right now. He just walk over.
What else do we want to talk about? Do we want to talk about documentary short subjects or film editing? Where else do we want to go with our wrap up of the Oscars that are coming up on Sunday?
Well, at least film editing will be shown, you know, so that's something to celebrate. Film editing used to always line up with like the best picture favorites,
mm-hmm.
but that has kind of departed more in recent years. And it's just a crazy category this year. How did Green Book get into film editing? I mean, you're supposed to be looking at the technical craft. I can see why Vice, because that has like visible film editing. That's such a stylistic type of movie that Adam McKay is making with The Big Short and now Vice. And his editor, Hank Corwin, did not win for The Big Short, which he conceivably could have. And so maybe they feel like he's due here. I would personally go with BlacKkKlansman because I love it. And this guy, Barry Alexander Brown, has edited most of Spike Lee's films, if not all of them.
Do we feel like Bill Street got snubbed in this category?
I feel like the biggest snub, and this can be said for like every category, is First Man.
Oh, yeah.
What happened? What happened there?
That's a bunch of people angry about the lack of the use of the American flag being planted, I guess.
And you wouldn't think that that's the people in the Academy, but I guess they just didn't watch it. So
I guess not. It's a great
story.
The story
of an introvert is a hard story to tell. It's hard to tell a story about a very quiet, unbeaten, you know, he's an American hero, but he doesn't really look like an American hero.
Right. They wanted it to, and I think the people that were complaining about the flag and all that stupid nonsense wanted it to be like First Walk on the Moon, maybe the name of the movie or something like that. It was not about the first walk, man. You know,
no,
the first,
not at all.
The moonwalk. It was about the man behind that mission.
It's about the struggles he's having emotionally. Yes. One of his children, like, dying. And how do you deal with all that? It's just
right.
It's worth watching for the scene where he actually does walk on the moon. Spoiler: he gets to the moon.
not according
because
to
of the.
So,
the
some
music
would say it's a
that scene.
Doesn't Stanley Kubrick have something to say about that?
Actually, Apollo 11, the new documentary that's coming out, it just premiered at Sundance. Hundreds of hours of footage from the mission that it looks like it was shot yesterday. I cannot wait to see that documentary. I think it's going to be on CNN. So,
oh, wonderful. Yeah,
but that will exonerate, you know, us and end all these stupid rumors about Kubrick filming the moon landing, hopefully.
Here's a fascinating question you for you guys. Do we think A Quiet Place will win for sound editing?
It was very quiet in my theater, except for the rustling of some popcorn.
I hope it wins. I love that movie.
It's amazing.
I do too. I thought that was an amazing film. And I'm sorry it wasn't nominated.
It's certainly one that we keep coming back to, that the year 2018... We talked about The Quiet Place more than just about any film, I think.
Well, because I did.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Kyle backed me up a little bit, but he gave me some other things to watch.
You always
can't
do.
Be quiet about it, though. No. I think that's just in general, the Oscars are going to prop up a few movies, but in the grand scheme of things, they are just an awards ceremony, a bunch of people patting each other on the back and campaigning. And the movies that we're really going to remember years from now are the movies like A Quiet Place that really people saw and all seem to enjoy. Maybe even Bohemian Rhapsody will be one of those movies. Sorry, Kyle.
It's okay.
But, you know, nobody really remembers or talks about the fact that, you know, nobody says How Green Was My Valley is the greatest movie of all time. They say that about Citizen Kane, which lost the best picture. You know, nobody talks about The Greatest Show on Earth unless it's to say one of the worst best picture winners ever. We still talk about High Noon that, you know, that lost to it. So, you know, time yep. will be the best judge of things, not the Oscars, but it's a fun show.
Which brings us to the big question, because we in fact, you may have just answered it. Does winning an Academy Award or the Academy Award even matter in the grand scheme of time?
It does for marketing, for projects. Mm-hmm. A lot of times have nominated or I won, right? But for validating the current film, probably not. I mean, I guess being nominated pushes theaters to put them back in a month leading up to the Oscars, and so it drives box office sales for the film, even if it got released 6 months ago.
So did it ever matter? Did this Academy Award winning film from, you know, 50 years ago, did that make it the best film of that year?
No, it just made it the most popular and, I guess, well-campaigned film of the year.
I had a friend of mine. So at one time, Steve, people collected VHS tapes and DVDs. These were these things that they didn't stream over the internet, the magic world that was created for us. And my buddy was going to put together a movie collection. Now, Steve and many people would go out and buy Star Wars or Raiders of the Lost Ark, or, you know, something like
good
that.
Good movies.
To create a collection. He decided that his collection was going to be the Oscar winners, and that's how he was going to start his collection. And that was, I mean, if you had a collection of all the winners, maybe that is something of interest.
Well, the AFI Top 100 list that came out at the turn of the century, you know, is that the list of Oscar winners? No, not necessarily. Uh-huh. The favorites are not necessarily the same as the best. I will argue this until I'm blue in the face, but I don't like these great movies that these people love. I like watching really raw work where people are struggling, trying to make a movie, and sometimes succeeding and sometimes failing. I'm well more entertained by The Room than I am by these movies this year.
Well, The Room is no Willow, Steve.
Okay. Willow is tough.
The Room is an American masterpiece. Don't you ever forget it.
That's right. So, I don't know. Have we resolved anything about the Oscars? We know that the show is going to happen on Sunday. We know that the controversy is going to be hanging over it. And does anybody really watch the Oscars? I put out a poll on Twitter, a very unscientific poll, and 92% of those respondents said no, they are not going to watch this show.
That was almost 1.32 million people who put together that poll. Steve, great job, by the way.
92% said no.
So that certainly is definitive right there.
That's pretty overwhelming. So what is this thing, the Oscars? Is it important?
Well, we are spending an entire show talking about movies.
We talk about movies all the time. We enjoy the entertainment, the community of watching movies together and discussing them. Is the Academy listening to us? Are they going to respond? Are they going to show us their favorites, and are they going to match up with our discussion that we've had today?
For Hollywood, they look at it as the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So this is so everything from here forward, or from January 1st forward, is moving towards the next Super Bowl, which is the Oscars. And it's just they somehow this became the default show that mattered.
Yeah. What do you think, Kyle?
I'll defer to Dane. He's the Oscar guy.
I think they need to find a way to make it, I guess, entertaining for everybody while not upsetting the purists like myself who want to see all 24 categories presented. Or, you know, I personally could actually do without the presentation of all four shorts categories. People have a hard time seeing them anyway. Those would be my, if they had to eliminate any, I would just say, move those to the commercial breaks every year. I don't know why they tried to remove all these categories like cinematography and editing from the broadcast, but they just need to find a way to make it an exciting show. And no host can save that, you know, by themselves, because people might just tune in for their opening monologue, you know, and then they only appear like three or four other times. They just
have a category like best Disney film. Do you think that would help?
Infinity War? Does that count?
Isn't best Disney film best animated feature, basically? I mean, they own all these companies. They own Marvel, so they're going to win for Spider-Man.
Right. So Black Panther versus Avengers versus Incredibles 2 versus Spider-Man.
All right, I think we've had a lot of fun, and I think we've solved nothing. And going forward, I think we have our opinions, and I think we're gonna see how they match up with the Academy.
Okay, I just want to drop for the listeners a list of some other films from this year that they should check out that didn't get the Oscars glove they deserved. Eighth Grade, Bo Burnham's directorial debut, fantastic. Blind Spotting, Mission Impossible Fallout, actually very good, very underrated. The Rider, Tully, Boy Erased, Crazy Rich Asians, The Old Man and the Gun, Lean on Pete, Sorry to Bother You, Mandy, Nicolas Cage, always good. We the Animals, Widows, Annihilation, Hearts Beat Loud, Beast, First Reformed, got a little bit of love. And then Sisters Brothers, You Were Never Really Here, Leave No Trace, Hereditary, and Death of Stalin. All very good films.
Wow, that is quite a list. Do you have that printed up somewhere, Kyle, that our listeners can go look for it?
I will have a blog post posted later this week with my top 10 of the year and kind of how the rest of the 140 films I saw this year stack up. And if you are on the Twitter, find me on Twitter. Yeah, 100. I hit 140. It was 150 2 years ago. It was 20 last year and 140 this year.
Wow. I saw Black Panther.
There you go. But as I mentioned, I've got 30-day Twitter thread going on of some other films, and so you'll see some of those over the next 7 days as well.
All right, so where do we find your Twitter thread, and where do you find your blog spot?
You can find me on the blogger at kyleahickman.blogspot.com, or you can find me on Twitter @Kyle_A_Hickman.
How about Dane? What is your list of movies that didn't get onto our Oscar list this year?
So Kyle said most everything I would say. the tops of those would be First Reformed, which wound up being number two on my top 10 this year. That's spectacular. Ethan Hawke should have been nominated for Best Actor for that. Just a great movie, and you can watch it if you have Amazon Prime. It's on there. So Eighth Grade would be another one that made my top 10. And I don't think he said it, but we've talked about it. Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
When I was listening to the announcements live at 7 in the morning on that Tuesday, I threw things across the room and I said, how could they screw this up?
I agree with you. I think that is a life-changing documentary. I've watched it 4 times and I just love every minute of that one.
My statement on that is whenever this movie plays, we really need to work in an area that there's less dirt in the air, and
in your eyes every time. Every time you're watching that movie, it's just such a dirty theater, and it gets in your eyes, and you have to bring tissues every time.
Exactly.
Also,
same theater place in terms of endearment too.
And beaches.
Yeah, beaches
and Armageddon.
Oh. Of course.
Listen, when he tells his daughter, he says, "Back, if you don't cry, you don't have a soul."
Dane, how can our listeners find more from your point of view on all of this stuff?
Well, right now, since my two podcasts I'm going to be on have not technically started, mm-hmm. They can find me on Twitter at Dane Michael. That's DaneMychal, because my parents had to be difficult. And then I'll update people when those podcasts go live. One's going to be called CF3. That's Cult Films, Fans, and Finds. So we're going to cover a cult film every episode and invite someone in off the street, basically, to talk about it with us. So.
There you go. That's my kind of podcast, where we talk about movies that I've actually seen.
Exactly. Everything that Riff Tracks and MST3K ever did. But unriffed.
Excellent. Wonderful, boys. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for joining us to talk all about all of this Oscars stuff, and we'll see what happens. So I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yeah, next week we've got a great guest lined up. We're going to, as wonderful as you guys have been today for this show, we have an author coming in next week, a British author named James Goss, who's written like 4 or 5 different Doctor Who novels. So I'll actually have something to say next week, which is nice. And Chip will be the one who's just sitting back and drinking a beer. It'll be great. It'll be wonderful. I look forward to that one. If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and Spotify, kids. We're on Spotify. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow, Oscar Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future.